roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz, our ace co-host. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm ready to talk about UFC on ESPN 12, which includes a headline bout of Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. 11 bouts total. It's this Saturday, folks, as it has been. You know, the UFC's back in action, has been in action for a couple of months now. And it's a simulcast. We'll talk about the start time, the television providers and internet provider, I guess, technically. We'll go over a little bit about the main card, and then we'll tackle some of the latest news here that has popped up in the last 24 hours. Don't forget, you can join us Monday and Thursday in this format, but do not overlook our Wednesday show on Sportscaster. All right, let's get to it, Goz. And folks, buckle up. Here we go. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, June 25th, early morning.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, Goz. So Saturday's card is the following. It's 11 bouts total, and the fights start at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. They're on ESPN and ESPN Plus all the way through to simulcast, and it's divided in 7 prelims and 4 main card. The main card starts at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. So for us West Coasters, that's rather early, 2 p.m., and that's why I want to emphasize it. Don't think you're going to be able to do a bunch of stuff and then come home at 5, 6, or 7 and turn on the television. It may be over by then. And the East Coasters, I know they appreciate it because I saw some people tweeting, oh, I love this early start time. Gives people a chance to maybe still salvage the night, although there's not much to do, I guess, depending on where you live. We're all still kind of stuck at home. Anyway, this is the way the fight breaks down, the fight card. I'm just going to blaze through some of these, and Goz can let me know if he wants to chime in or not. But things start off in the strawweight division with Jin Yu Frey versus Kay Hansen. Then we go to men's featherweight, Jordan Griffin versus Yusuf Zalal. Hey, real quick, what's your favorite division right now? I know we change
bantamweight.
Change up a lot, but okay, bantam.
What's two? Bantamweight and welterweight.
So bantamweight's one, welterweight's two. Mm-hmm. What's three?
Maybe light heavyweight, depending on what's going on.
Okay, fair. Featherweights are just there somewhere, but not in the top three. Got it. All right, Takahashi Sato versus Ramiz Brahimaj, I believe I got that right. They are welterweights. Tanner Bowser versus Philippe Lins. Those are heavyweights. Luis Pena versus Karma Worthy. They don't call him Violent Bob Ross enough.
I'm starting to really like that guy.
Yeah, those are lightweights, if I didn't say that. Sean Woodson versus Julian Erosa. featherweights. Then we get to the main card. They start in the heavyweight division. Maurice Greene versus John Vellante. Vellante coming up to heavyweight. Brandon Allen versus Kyle Daukaus. And those guys are fighting at 185 middleweight. Mickey Gall versus Mike Perry, welterweight. And in the main event, Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker, lightweight. We did lose Aspen Ladd versus Sarah McMahon. We had Aspen Ladd on the show yesterday, or not the show, but, you know, we're doing interviews now in the video format, so you can catch those when the fighters recap the interviews, and then always know that you can catch the full interview, because usually they include video highlights on a particular angle they take when they, you know, recap the interview. And if you want to see the whole interview, you can go to www.youtube.com/MMAJunkie. I highly recommend you watch the entire Calvin Kattar interview, the entire Boss Rudin interview. Boss Rudin, we got a street fight story out of him, and then two additional stories out that didn't involve necessarily street fights, just the crazy wackiness that is Boss Rudin. So check that out in its entirety. I thought John McCarthy was another one you can just sit through. You know, we covered a lot with him as well. And there was one other one that I really enjoyed. Jim Miller. That was fun. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of talking to him about a few different things. The staple gun at the end. He kind of brushed up a story that we've known for a long time. And every single time a staple gun comes up, we always say, did you hear about Jim Miller? But
Nail gun.
I always forget about these stories, you know what I mean? And I'm glad he brushed up for us. 1 week before his brother's wedding and 1 week before his fight. Nuts.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but just, I think you said it. His story actually really sums up his career and who he is and how he's fought. Mm-hmm. It's a good story.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so Poirier versus Hooker. Look, how can I break it down to you? The latest way I look at the lightweight division is you have Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje. That's scheduled for September, kind of tentatively. Khabib Nurmagomedov's dad was battling COVID-19. It seems like that part is over, but he's still in critical condition. So, that said, he's done some interviews that we've translated where he says he's still training because that's what his dad would want. But he visits his dad every day. He has faith that his dad will come back to full health. But again, he no longer has to deal with the COVID-19 portion of what was keeping him in the hospital. Remember, he was in a coma, folks. And he woke out of it, then he slipped back into it. But the latest I saw was there was some improvement. So, if you have him versus Gaethje, what else do you have? Well, you have Conor McGregor, I guess, waiting for the winner. He is technically retired, but who believes that? You know? Then you got Tony Ferguson, who lost, but oh no, he's 13-2 now as a lightweight, so he'll always be a contender. He just hasn't been matched up against anybody. Deservedly so. He probably needs, I would say, 6 months in between, you know, his fight in April until the next time. I just don't see any urgency in shoving him in there at the Apex in July or August. But then you get to Poirier versus Hooker. So Poirier had a shot at the undisputed title last September, and he lost. Hooker is rising. He's got a six-fight win streak. He's got some good wins under his belt, and that's why he's catching a veteran. If he gets past that veteran, hey, if McGregor's not ready to roll and Ferguson doesn't have any sort of a campaign, I guess. And by that, I mean, well, we've always wanted to see Tony versus Khabib. You know, I don't know. I'm just saying that's where Hooker can slide in. Same thing with Charles Oliveira. He's been streaking as well. That's another guy that seems to be like a trailer of sorts. So I guess, can we say, goes that this fight has title implications in a way? Or
it could.
Future title and implications? How do we phrase it? It's important. I know that. It's going to be fabulous.
It's important. It just depends in the right scenario, I guess it could. But, you know, right now I think things are pretty set. I think that's just kind of like a next step type fight. you look at what both guys have to prove, and Dustin Poirier's got to show the world that he's been able to shake off that Khabib loss, get better in the process, and then Dan Hooker's got to show us that he's going to make that next jump into the elite.
And pretty much anyone that says, okay, so McGregor's out, he's retired, right? You just want to say, shut up, right? I mean, he'll unretire and he'll face the winner of Gaethje and Khabib, which puts anyone else into 2021 at that point, right?
You would imagine.
Yeah.
You
so it's an important fight, but it's not the direct fight to a title shot. But either way, I mean, aren't you expecting like a fight of the night candidate?
Yeah, because if you look at their records and look at their finishing rates, what their fights have looked like in the past, there's almost no way around it. Like, these two dudes are going to come out and bang. It's going to be fun.
I loved Hooker versus Felder.
Great fight.
And I've loved Poirier versus everyone. Fill in the blank except Khabib. But, yeah, pretty much everyone. He's had some battles. By the way, Dustin Poirier minus 225. Dan Hooker plus 185. See, Dan Tom's already done his breakdown, and he kind of touches on the odds a little bit and which way he's leaning, but what you can look out for. And just in the way he talks, you can see that he feels like he wouldn't hate you if you slip something on Dan Hooker, because I think he sees it a little bit more even than
I do too.
Than what the odds makers are saying. But his job is to also break it down and give us a winner. He sides with Dustin Poirier in the end.
I wouldn't go with Dustin Poirier any more than minus 200. But I think a 185 maybe is fair. This is the way I look at it, especially coming off a loss.
That side of things, you know, the whole odds maker side, mm-hmm. I've never known too much about the creation of them. But let's just say he was 200, minus 200. So that's a 2-1 favorite. Does that mean that if they were to fight 30 times, Dustin would win 20 and Hooker would win 10, 2-1, like that? Or just 3 times, Dustin would win 2, and Hooker would win 1. So is that basically what they're saying?
Anything over minus 200, I would say they're saying if they were to fight 10 times, Dustin wins 7. I think is the way I look at it.
And I guess he could. I guess he could. The 7-3 is not that far from 5-5, I guess, but... 5-5 would be flip them, right? Flip a coin.
Yeah.
Minus 115 or minus 110. Mm-hmm. So, man, I just don't see, like, I need to ask Joey Odessa, well, what's 225? Because that sounds more like 8-2 at this point. Or is it 7-3? I don't know, man. But all I know is I've doubted Hooker a few times now, and he's kind of impressed. Yeah. I'm going with Poirier. I already submitted Poirier.
That was my pick, too.
But, That's
but Poirier can be frustrated sometimes, and Dan Hooker's that type of fighter. He has that type of style that I think can frustrate you.
Yeah. What about this main event? Co-main event. You think they are just... Has Mickey Gall just done a great job of promoting himself over the years that you go, oh, man, he's back in action? Remember, he's let us down a few times, mm-hmm. but then there's other times where, like, oh, okay, like, I see someone here who continues to get better and better, but... I don't know if he's ready for Mike Perry, because Mike Perry, okay, he's got the one coach and it's his girlfriend and he says the N-word from time to time and he had that incident with the coach once and, you know, he can be an entertaining or obnoxious or whatever type of interview. He's a character, man. There's no way you can deny that part. But homeboy can fight. So he's minus 290, goes, and Gall's plus 245. I mean, do you see that type of destruction heading towards Gall?
Sort of, but the problem with Mike Perry is he's very, very explosive, but if you look at everything that happens in his personal life, the way he approaches the sport, he just does everything that you wouldn't want a fighter to do. And Mickey Gall is the opposite. He seems like he trains really hard. He seems like he's very focused. He can talk a lot, and sometimes he hasn't been able to back it up in the cage. That's kind of the issue. I don't know that he's ready to take that next step in his UFC career just yet. I think the talk might have got a little bit the best of him, and they might have pushed him a little bit too much. this Mike Perry fight, I think, might be a little bit too much for him. But if Mickey Gall is improving fight to fight, then I could see him getting close enough to make that improvement to be able to contend in this fight. But I mean, like, Paul Felder's a tough character, right? And granted, he went up in weight class, but that was a war with Mike Perry.
And that's
Paul Felder. And I don't see Mickey Gall having the skills to sit there and do something like that. So it's tough. But if you look at Mike Perry's frame of mind and where he's coming from, you never know with that dude. And he's going with one corner woman. I mean, I don't know that that makes a lot of sense. If it did, more people would do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I wonder if some sense has been talked into him since then, or maybe one of the other corners that's already fought by the time he gets there. Maybe he's got an agreement for someone else to come out. There's got to be more than just the obvious reasons on one person in your corner. What if just that one person freezes? Like, imagine coming back to your corner, and if that one person just freezes in the moment, and I don't know. I think I'd grab myself somebody at the last minute. You know what I mean? From the other team.
Well, yeah.
Like, you got to know somebody. Hey, we trained at Jackson's, or we trained at ATT. Man, when your fight's over, come in here. I think they can pull it off. You know, I know they have a strict quarantine, but who knows?
Probably, I mean,
talking out of my ass at this point.
What if you have three to four people in your corner and they're watching the fight? Somebody's bound to see something that you're not seeing. Everything's happening so fast in the cage, and I think you do need them to say something that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know that that she's up for something like that. And listen, I've seen a lot of fights in my day. I've been to a lot of fights in my day, but I have to imagine that if I got thrusted into a corner, I might freeze, let alone if I'm the lead corner all of a sudden, the only one there, then almost for sure I think I'm going to be freezing. So I really don't know. If you add in, like, think about some of the psychological factors, like, what if he's nervous for her? Like, he doesn't need that. It's just such an odd thing. I mean, I think it's a bigger factor than people are saying.
I promise you I'm not playing the game where there was always two answers and whatever one you said, I was going to go with the other. It was, you know, those trick questions when you were little.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a scene in my head from a movie where someone once froze in competition. If you can guess it, I will get us round table pizza anytime you want from now until through Sunday.
I don't get any clues. It's just any movie in the world.
Well, I mean, if I start to say too many things, you're just going to jump on it real fast. But yeah. All
right, a movie when somebody froze.
Yeah, think about, dude, I only watch like 20 movies. I don't watch that many. Like, if I do, I forget them. But there's like 20 that are ingrained in my head. But can you think of a movie where a coach froze in a moment where...
Yeah, Hoosiers.
Damn it. Yeah. Do you remember his name?
Shooter,
yeah.
Yeah.
He froze, man. Dennis Hopper played Shooter.
Mm-hmm. He got bailed out, too, by his kid when he finally did.
He goes, you reckon they're going to run it to number 22, Dad? And he goes, yeah. And then all of a sudden he got going. Mm-hmm. The juice started going, and boom. He said what he needed to say. Then they come back, devise a plan, and boom. He hit Shooter... Had a hand in that state championship.
Mm-hmm. They love that.
Don't get caught watching the paint dry, which, if I'm not mistaken, means the 3 point or 3 seconds. You know, mm-hmm. don't get caught for 3 seconds as well. That's an awesome movie. Shooters with an awesome soundtrack.
That's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Me too. I love it. It's one of those where you walk in, you go, "What's that?" Oh shit! Hold on, just grab a seat. Open a beer. We're gonna finish this one through. All right, folks, so that's the lineup for Saturday, and now let's talk about some of the latest news. Well, we covered a lot yesterday on our Sportscaster show. Go back, folks. You can go to sportscaster.com/MMA junkie and you can catch the whole show there. John McCarthy was on the show. So the week before, Calvin Kattar. The week before that, Ray Longo. all those shows are there waiting for you if you want to go back. Like, if you literally subscribe to this show and say, I wish they would go back to 5 days a week. There's a couple, there's shows for the past few Wednesdays. The last, I think we've done 3 full months now on Sportscaster. So they're all there and they're pretty easy to find. So check it out. Anyway, Sean O'Malley is interested in fighting Marlon Vera. I'm into it, goes, except I was a little bit more into Sean O'Malley versus Cody Garbrandt.
That would have been too much, though.
Yeah, too much, but then if we slow it down, we're like, well, wait a minute. Are we navigating his career like Conor McGregor? Remember, he used to get a little bit of that.
But Chito Vera, it just depends on how you look at it, right? Like, he got a loss in his last fight, but a lot of people felt like he won. And so what are we always asking of the matchmakers? When that situation happens, let's act like he won.
Okay.
And I think this is the type of fight that is almost like a reward for him in the sense.
That seems fair.
So I'm totally cool with this fight. I think it really makes sense. And I think it's like the matchmakers trying to dial everybody back down to earth a little bit. Because Cody Garbrandt would have been way too much, way too quick. I would think maybe with a victory here, especially if it's a victory the way Sean O'Malley had his last victory, with a stamp on it, then maybe you can make like a Cody Garbrandt fight type of fight. Then I think it makes sense. But I think a jump from Eddie Wineland to Cody Garbrandt would just be way too much.
Well, they're into it on social media. He called them out, and on Instagram and on Brendan Schaub's show, The Food Truck Diaries, Chito Vera has already replied. Basically, send me the papers. And I promise you'll make this guy. And I promise you, I make this guy quick and beg me to stop. He probably meant quit and beg me to stop. So they're into it. And I guess that's an excellent point. How many times do we say if you got robbed? Can the promotion show that it was a quality loss and we're willing to give you another quality opponent? I like that explanation. Okay.
I'm totally into that fight, by the way. I think that's a great fight. I think that's a tough fight for Marlon Vera. I like Marlon Vera, but I just think stylistically, this could be a very tough fight for him. I see that as almost pretty damn close to pick him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're buying into the O'Malley hype? Like, he's kind of turned the corner. Like, he's no longer just somebody who's, you know, got a great marketing behind him and everybody's into it. You know, the look that he has, but he's actually delivering the goods.
I think he's getting better.
Yeah, I agree, man.
Yeah, I wasn't really buying into the hype early on, but I think that the dude is getting better. He's doing what they wanted Sage Northcutt, certain fighters like that to do. He's actually doing it. He's actually going along with the progression and taking advantage of those situations, but also getting better along the way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Did you hear about Billy Quarantillo, who was cornering Matt Frivola, but because he tested positive, they canceled the Frivola match last week? And then if you recall, that's when I believe Justin James slipped in and defeated Frank Camacho. Justin James has to be thanking Billy Quarantillo. Thank you for testing positive, thereby pulling your boy, which allowed me to go in and fight, win, and take home a bonus, the performance bonus. Like, his life literally changed. And Quarantillo and Frivola, in the meantime, had to drive 40 hours back to back east, I guess, Florida or wherever, because they would not allow them to jump on a plane. So they had two choices: stay 2 weeks in an Airbnb on the UFC's dime here in Vegas, or drive back. They chose to drive back. What I didn't get, and I don't know if you read the article, but why would the other guy drive with him?
Yeah, I have no idea. And who the hell, like, what, aren't, there's got to be some rules to Airbnb, right? I know if I'm hosting and I read that story, I'm probably going, bitch, I don't know about that. Like, I would just think they put them in a hotel, definitely separate them. I don't know. None of that really made much sense to me. And as far as they go, like,
I would have done the Airbnb. You know why?
Yeah, because then you're away from your family,
too. Well, you're in town, too. You're in town. There's still this week's card. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess it was still 2 weeks, but if the two-week rule applied, then I guess they couldn't get on this week's card. Maybe I take it back. But if Frivola's like test me every day, you know, and someone slipped out, or they could find him an opponent, you know, I don't know. Or could he just continue with his camp and fly to Abu Dhabi, or are those cards locked and loaded? I mean, I don't know. Like,
don't you want to be away from your family though? Like, you know, not get them sick as well. Like, you're giving, if I were to get COVID-19, I put George in a really bad spot because we live together. You know, this house is not that big. We're going to run into each other. But if I was given the opportunity to be in a hotel room and get away from everyone, and I'm going to jump on that, because now I don't have to worry everybody else that's in this house. I would think he stays back in Vegas and sits in a hotel room and bet on somebody else's dime too.
So let me read you this part. Quarantillo, 31, was slated as the corner man for his friend and training partner Frivola, who was scheduled to fight Frank Camacho in a lightweight bout at UFC on ESPN 11. Upon getting the UFC's fight week arrival swab, Quarantillo tested positive. Quarantillo and Frivola were required to self-quarantine in separate rooms. Frivola tested negative for the swab, but tested positive for an antibody test. What does that mean?
Well, that means he's had it, right?
Yeah, so therefore, he couldn't get it again, right?
Well, that's what they say, but then...
But there hasn't been like a healthy dose of people that have gotten it twice. We hear these stories of maybe it never went away, or maybe the first one was full. Yeah, so I'm tripping here. So then maybe Frivola's like, well, I can't get it, so yeah, we'll go home together. We'll get home faster in 40 hours rather than sit here for a fight that we can't get. I guess. Maybe that was it, yeah. The UFC PI is not really available to them. There's not a fight card they can get on because of the 2-week wait, not the 1-week wait. So I think maybe in the end, they just would rather get back to their families. But yeah, 40 hours, man. I remember Frivola as a Northeast guy, so I think they were headed to... Oh, no. It says Quarantillo not allowed to fly home to Florida. Wasn't Frivola one of those Northeast guys? Steamrolla? I thought he was like a New York or New Jersey guy.
I thought he was, yeah.
But they went to Florida, it looks like.
They are pretty close to being one of the loudest contingents ever for a Dana White's Contender Series.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. Them and...
don't start.
Rachel Ostovich and Kylan Curran.
Toby.
And then that Armenian crew.
They didn't have anything like that we remember them by.
Steamrolla was like 10 guys, dude. Every 30, as Dan Tom, who's sitting right next to me, like after every, I don't know, 20 seconds, they would say it just for no reason. God, that was a horrible day.
I don't know, man. Come on, Toby.
That one was bad because it was right behind us.
Come on, Tobes. Come on, Tobias. There's one more. Come on, Tobes.
Oh. I think on Tobes, you might have said something kind of loud. I think you went, come on, Tobes, or something like that.
It was driving me nuts. I wanted that fight to end. I wanted one of them to just do the Masvidal knee. I wanted it to end at any point. The MVP knee, the Taiwan Claxton knee, just someone run across that karate kick that Verdum starts his fights off with. Anything, man. Anything that would have just ended it. How about Michael Bisping and Chad Mendes getting into it? Did you hear about that one?
Yeah, that was pretty intense.
Yeah. So Tim Kennedy was celebrating his 6-year anniversary win over Michael Bisping. Chad Mendes slipped in a comment, and I tried to go back to see what it was, but there was 2,500 comments. So you know when you hit like reply or view replies on Instagram, if there's only like 17 and you hit view replies, it'll go 14 view replies, more replies. 11 more, 9. It only breaks down like three, or it only releases three or two of them at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not in early, what are you going to do? Sit there and click that literally 1,000 times, or whatever 2,500 divided by 3 is 800 times. Who's got time for that? Not me. But I guess Mendez said something. I'd love to know what he said, but I know what Bisbee told him because Bisbee saw that. And he slipped into Chad Mendez's DMs. "You little steroid cheating fuck," Bisbee said. "Don't be sour because your career amounted to nothing. Ignorant and okay, that's what the other guy must have told him. Mendez must have told Kennedy.
Ignorant. No, that's what Bisping told Mendez.
Well, yeah, but he's saying ignorant and disrespectful, kind of like he's quoting it and and in a question form.
Okay.
So, like, you're calling me ignorant and disrespectful? And then he continues, "What, like disrespecting the sport by taking steroids, by dishonoring yourself and your opponent in a sport that someone could die? Shame on you, you little dipshit." So Mendez went on Instagram and he posted on his own Instagram and posted the picture of when Dan Henderson had knocked down Bisping, and then he's in midair doing the follow up,
which is kind of the MMA's Jordan symbol.
A little bit, yeah. This was at UFC 100 in 2009, the H-bomb. He writes back, Hey Mike Bisping, let's get some shit straight here. When I let USADA suspend me, it was for a banned peptide under their rules, not a steroid. Just to put some shit into perspective for morons like you, too much caffeine in your system is a violation under USADA rules. That entire system is the biggest crock of shit ever implemented into the UFC. Unlike all these other guys getting popped and making up the worst excuses ever to wheel and deal their suspension down, I own that shit like a man. Now keep my name out of your mouth, you old wooden eye having prick, before I snatch your soul like my boy Dan Hendo did.
I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't particularly hate or like either one of those guys. That's a pretty good burn. Like, he covered a lot, Chad Mendez, in that. He must have been really pissed off. Well, he defended his
steroid case, or I guess in this case it wasn't a steroid case, but he defended that, and then he had a little personal jab, and then he included the picture. So, yeah, it was one hell of a comeback. Now, I haven't been on Bisping's side to, let's see if Bisping's posted anything since then, or if they just let it go. Bisping went the route of a DM, but it looks like, yeah, it looks like they might be over. Remember Bisping didn't like those guys at Team Alpha Male and said something about, didn't he call them midgets or something like that?
I don't know.
Years ago, I remember, yeah, he was kind of beefing with,
he's beefed with quite a few people.
With the team, and I think things got sorted out a little bit, but yeah, what do I know? I mean, it was something like that. Anyway, so I think that's always remained, is my point. All right, folks, so don't forget on Saturday, UFC on ESPN 12, on ESPN and ESPN Plus, 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern for the prelims, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern for the main card. The main event is Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. The co-main event is Mickey Gall versus Mike Perry. If you haven't heard, the Aspen Ladd Sarah McMahon fight is off because Aspen Ladd, it appears, has torn her ACL. I think she was going in for a final evaluation today to see if she would need a surgery. She told us that yesterday when we interviewed her. So when you see those stories on MMA Junkie's front page that say the writer's name, like Nolan or Farah or Mike Bond or whoever, and Junkie Radio, MMA Junkie Radio, that's us. Those are the ones that include some video highlights of us conducting the interview. And then you can watch the whole interview at youtube.com/MMA Junkie. Just subscribe to that because you'll get a lot of cool content and you'll get a notification of when we've recorded something or even when our YouTube channel is live. Anyway, we're out of here for now. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. This will be the last event for 2 weeks. Next week is off because of the holiday, July 4th, Independence Day. And then the following week is UFC 251 with 3 title fights, including Kamaru Usman defending against Gilbert Burns, Alexander Volkanovski defending against Max Holloway. And the vacant bantamweight title is up for grabs as Peter Yan and Jose Aldo will battle for that one. So 3 title fights. It's a pretty stacked card. And you won't want to miss that one. That one, again, is a pay-per-view. And then that one's followed by three other cards. It's four fight cards in 15 days out at Yas Island in Abu Dhabi. So those will be a lot of the fighters from, you know, that are international and aren't able to fight in the United States because of COVID-19. You're going to see a lot of those guys and gals in action. And next Monday, we'll be back with our show, you know, here in the podcast form. And I imagine we'll be back on Wednesdays. It's technically July, and I just got to make sure with Sportscaster, they seem to love us. We love them, but I think we'll be back there as well, continuing our Wednesday run. And I imagine 251 will be a watch along. So there you go. We'll clarify all that on next Monday's show. Have a nice weekend. Be safe and always be a champion.